Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Economics and the Spiritual Path, hosted by David Axelrod with guidance from Dax. Each show expands on the language, ideas, and insights from economic thought that can empower and enlighten the journey through your inner environment toward healing, creativity, and spiritual expression.
Well, hello everyone. I hope you're
enjoying.
Yeah, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, so I'm saying hello to everyone on this Thanksgiving Eve. Hopefully, everyone has been busy working on what they're grateful for and what their Thanksgiving is for. The continuation from the show last night, which was very interesting. We had a nice show last night.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a good perspective. So, it was fun hanging out with you last night.
Yeah, I really appreciated you including me. I was listening to it for a little bit. A while before I called in, because I was really interested in what everybody else was saying also.
Yeah, I mean, there were some good perspectives.
Yeah.
Yeah, I particularly liked the one about lessons, being thankful for the lessons that we have, the lessons that we were given and the lessons we've learned from it. So, taking that kind of perspective on things makes it easier to be grateful about everything, really.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If there's one thing you want to walk away from Thanksgiving with, besides being, full of all sorts of tasty food, is that feeling of life is good.
Indeed. So you got some pretty cool stuff for tonight.
Yes.
I'm pretty excited.
So for tonight, continue the development of the language and the ideas, and two main things. I'm going to talk a little bit about realms of experience and the relationship of time and choice. And so maybe we'll just start with realms of experience right now. How does that sound to you?
Sounds good.
Okay. So in terms of what goes on in the world, at the core of it, what's important is how we experience the world. Sometimes we get like a little heavy on the materialistic side, and we get more concerned about the things that we have than the experiences that we're having with and from and through life. And this is important because at some point we do have to make choices about how we experience life. Sometimes it is dependent on, the material things we have, but sometimes it's dependent on our relationships, our friends, our coworkers, our loved ones, our families, the people we play with, the people we might do ritual work with. And I find it useful to understand experiences in four categories, the physical, the emotional, rational, and the spiritual. And so the realm of experience at the physical world and the realm of physical experience can be understood as the realm of senses. So it's very immediate. It could be sight, it could be hearing, it could be touch. The nature of a physical experience is something that it's very immediate. It's as if you're being, touched. Now, that can have various forms, but that immediacy is what's key. And so any kind of work that you want to do to get better understanding of physical experience will be around awareness of senses, both the senses that, come inwards, so like cognitive senses, and those that go outward. In Hindu philosophy, they talk about 10 senses, 5 that come in and 5 that go out. So sort of 5 come in are sort of impressions on your mind, and the 5 that go out are expressions. So we can talk about then, physical impression or physical expression, and that's sort of the nature of the physical experience.
Now let me jump in. So you're saying like the expression, the look in someone's eyes, is an expression through sight, or you lost me on that part. I'm going to jump in and ask questions. So
please do.
So I get the 5 coming in, but the 5 going out. I'm a little fuzzy on that. You got me on that.
Well, yeah. Well, the 5 going in, we're very used to in Hindu philosophy, and particularly in yogic traditions that go back a long time. They'll talk about 5 outward senses, and this is like the sense of walking, sense of walking, sense of talking, the sense of relieving yourself, and a couple others. But it's the way to understand it is when you feel like you're putting energy out to the world, that you're expressing yourself to the world.
Okay.
That's an outward sense.
Okay.
And so that's the big seeing and hearing. It's like an inward impression, right? Something is coming into us, whereas the outward senses are the ones where we're experiencing it going outward to the world.
It's active rather than passive.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
It's.
Gotcha.
Yep.
I apologize for interrupting, but that was baffling me. So I get it now.
So that's the realm of physical experience. Then there is the realm of emotional experience, and there, instead of it being senses, the medium is of feelings. And I think it's very important to make a distinction between, you know, a sense and a feeling. A lot of times we kind of use those words interchangeably, but if you can be clear on the distinction between a sense and a feeling, then you can be much more mindful about what's going on in your emotional life. So there is a close relationship between senses and feelings, because it's very, very often it something happens at the in a sensory in our sensory world that triggers a feeling, right? So, you know, maybe someone steps on your toe, and that triggers you to feel angry, right?
Right.
Or someone, you know, someone, you know, puts their hand on your shoulder, and you feel comforted. So, so they're very often very closely related, but the distinction is very important, because if you if you're aware of what you want in terms of how you want to feel, then you can separate what has to occur in the physical senses in order to have that feeling. And so there's a room for empowerment there.
Okay.
And so you can, you know, talk about, again, you know, same kind of idea of feelings inward and feelings outward. So, you know, receiving feelings and expressing feelings. I generally understand that the outward are our emotions. So when it's coming inward, when we experience it coming in, that's a feeling. If it's going outward, that's an emotion. So I want to suggest that as a way of understanding the relationship between emotions and feelings. You know, that emotions are about expressing yourself in the world, and feelings are about, you know, receiving what's going on in the world.
Okay.
Okay. Then the third realm of experience I refer to as the rational, and there the medium is thought. And so unlike senses and unlike feelings, you know, a thought is just, you know, a thought. You know, it could be an idea in your head. It can be, you know, if you're very mathematically inclined, it could be an equation or, you know, some set of symbols that you're playing with. But the key is that in the realm of the rational, where while, you know, it could be, you know, given your own personal life experiences associated with feelings and senses, thoughts themselves do not require having a specific feeling or a specific sense. And so those who are very trained in the you know, in the intellectual field, one of the things that they try to master is not letting their emotions and feelings guide what they're thinking. To be able to step back from that, so that if someone is telling them something, it's easier to discern whether, you know, they're saying something contradictory, or you know, something that, you know, mostly is just gobbledygook, unless you have an emotional charge around it.
But I mean, but does thought include interpreting what we sense?
Well, a thought could be a outcome of a sense that you have. You know, like, in other words, you have some kind of experience that might be at the physical level, and at some point that, yeah, that could lead you to thinking about it. You know, it could lead you to think about it either directly, in other words, you pour yourself a glass of milk and you taste it, and it tastes really sour, and, you know, you might have an immediate thought of, oh, this is sour, it's bad. I should not have any more of it.
Well, I was thinking about the sensation of touch, and then we interpret whether or not touch is a good thing or a bad thing based on our circumstances, which could lead to an emotional or a feeling.
Right, right.
And so the three begin to all play together. Separate, but they lead one to another to another to, and there's this dance going on.
Absolutely, I don't want to leave the impression that you know, these are, you know, totally separate realms of experience. They're certainly going to be entangled, and you know, they're entangled frequently. I mean, one might say that you know, the practice of mindfulness, at the core of mindfulness, is being able to distinction. So yeah, in our everyday life, when we're not being, you know, particularly aware or mindful of, you know, what's going on, we can just have a big ball of senses and feelings and thoughts, and, you know, we just take it all in simultaneously. But that also means that we're not always very careful with what we're thinking. You know, we're not always careful with what we're saying. Because it's being motivated by, you know, some deeper feeling. You know, it's sort of like, you know, when you get really annoyed with someone, if you start getting testy, you might say something that you either don't mean or, you know, something you just know isn't true. And so the challenge there is, you know, you want to be aware of what you're feeling. But you don't necessarily want your feelings to run how you're thinking.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But I think what you're saying is important to keep in mind that, you know, typically these all do work together almost, you know, like in a synesthetic way, you might say. So to get the physical, the emotional, the rational. So physical is sort of the world of senses. Emotional is the world of feelings. The rational is the world of thoughts. And the fourth realm I refer to as the realm of the spiritual, so spiritual experiences. And there, the media of the experience is intuitions. And, you know, that sort of like a higher knowing. I find it very useful to make a distinction between not only intuitions and thoughts, but in particularly intuitions and feelings. I find many people tend to conflate the two. So if it's an intuition, then it's going to be connected with, you're going to have sort of a connection with some kind of a higher knowing. Whereas with a feeling, it's more about, it's more reactionary than that. You know, when you have it's a bit more immediate.
Right, and I get the idea that they do get kind of intermingled, particularly feelings, because that's really the word we use as well. Is I felt something was wrong. And
right.
And it does come across, in some people, it comes across even as a sensual, the gut check. It feels wrong in my belly. And you actually have that physical sensation that is the way that your body interprets that intuitive knowing, and the hair on the back of our heads or the back of our neck standing up.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, you know, that's, you know, our body has sensed something, or we have been given a spiritual message, an intuitive message, that we have a physical reaction to, and then understanding where that feeling or sensation comes from. And I see the benefit that you're of separating, because we do talk about a physical sensation or an emotional feeling is the way our body interprets very often these intuitive knowings.
Yes, yes. And I think, you know, another useful way to kind of make that distinction is that if it's about intuition, it's, you know, what is true, whereas if it's feeling, it's more about what you want to be true. And you know, and that's an important distinction to make, because I think we all, you know, at one point or another, you know, if we want something to be true, it could be at a subtle enough level that we, you know, interpret that to mean, oh, you know, it is true, you know. But that's not always the case. And you know, one of the ways you can see that is if you get an intuition, you may not like the feeling of that intuition. So like what you were just saying, like, you know, like feels like something's wrong. But, you know, that may be easier to recognize. On the other hand, you know, the feeling may be it's like, I don't want this to happen. Something's going to happen, and I don't want it to happen, which is not intuition. It's the feeling. So in some ways, you know, to have clarity of intuition, you really have to step back from, you know, what it is that you want or don't want. You know, clarity of intuition shows up when you give away attachment to an outcome, and that's kind of a Zen Buddhist thing. Stepping back from attachment to the world, especially the material world. And yeah, you know, if you're capable of doing that, that's where you're going to get the clearest intuition, because you're not going to fight the intuition. It'll be there. You'll recognize it. You know, you can decide what you want to do about it. But if you're really caught up in your feelings, if you're caught up in your thoughts or your senses, you don't always get the intuition clearly. And you know, and that's part of being human.
Yeah, and sometimes they're in conflict with our feelings, what we want, and that intuitive message that says, probably not. But we want it anyway, and we therefore kind of override the intuitive message, often to our detriment, but we do it as humans.
Absolutely. I think that's well put. And let's face it, you know, these realms of experience, the physical, emotional, rational, spiritual, another way of understanding them, so the physical is at the most most gross level, and emotion is a little bit more subtle, and the rational is more subtle than that, and spiritual is very, very subtle. And so if you've got all sorts of you know, either imbalances or disruptions going on at the more dense experiences, you're not going to be able to really pick up those intuitions clearly.
Okay. Yeah, one would almost say that, like, the physical and the emotional are almost instinctual, whereas the rational and the spiritual, the thoughts and intuitions, are more human, more elevated above the animal.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that they do require more development because of the subtlety. Not to say that animals don't have intuitions, but certainly not in the same way that, you know, let's say, you know, humans do.
Right. Yeah, that rational aspect, the cognitive consideration of the situation is definitely something that separates that from the rest of the crowd.
And I think what's also useful in understanding the breakdown of the form, well, first of all, you know, I think, you know, the role of mindfulness and balance is to have a good balance between the realms, you know, to be able to move, you know, fairly easily in these experiences when you need to. But I'd also like to, you know, throw out an interesting contrast, which is, you know, I think the world of science has a physical, rational nexus. You know, it's very much about, you know, senses in the sense of, you know, instrumental sensation, you know, scientific instruments. I mean, those are a form of sense organ. So science kind of has that axis between the physical and the rational. But in the world of what most people would call the spiritual, the axis is more along the emotional and spiritual. And another way of looking at it is that at the, you know, in the physical realm, the rational realm, you're almost dealing with, like, you know, particles, whereas in the realm of emotions and spirit, you're dealing more with waves, if you want to use that particle-wave duality.
Uh-huh. Yeah, beams or rays. Or
right.
Waves or beams. Or yeah. And you know, I mean, we could get into the physical science part of it, which I'm fascinated by. But does an electron move in a beam, or does it act as a particle, or does it act as a wave?
A wave, right? Exactly.
And it depends on the experiment, and oftentimes the belief of the observer, which is a whole other branch of science, which is, you know, starting up.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But no, I like your kind of thought process there with the sense is what we can observe, because science is about experiment, observe, repeat. And
yes,
experiment,
yes,
observe, repeat. And so it is about very physical and thought. We think of it, we experiment to prove it. We observe the outcome, we get the result we expected or not, but we have a result which is observed in a sensual kind of way.
Yes, and I think a little bit of this distinction between, you know, science and, you know, sort of just, you know, every day is that part of an observation is you have those kind of sensory experiences, but what, after you've had that experience, that sense, you're left with information, you know, typically in a form of numbers. So at the core of an observation is taking something like a sensory experience and turning it into a set of symbols. And it's
like
the set of symbols. Yeah, like
quantifying rather than qualifying.
Right. And it's the set of symbols that your rational mind can work with and look at it in different ways. So if that's the science, yes?
No, I was just going to say, so it becomes a quantity versus a quality kind of issue. Whereas quality is more in the realm of emotion and intuition is the quality.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I was just going to say that. If you want to be aware of the quality of something, that is much more in terms of feelings and intuitions than it is, a sense or a thought. And,
okay.
I think that's why the people who do work in the spiritual realm, you know, not that they don't have, you know, senses to work with and not that they couldn't think, but they tend to focus more on feelings and intuitions. And it's really interesting is, you know, when you've got someone who's got a very deep spiritual background and, you know, they connect with someone who's got a very deep scientific background, and at first they might have difficulty communicating, but once they figure out how to communicate, you know, they end up with something, you know, so much more than either has alone.
I can see that. I can grasp that, yeah. It becomes
so
a complete.
Yep. So shall we take a little music break for now?
Hey, it looks like it's about time, and that's a good break point, so.
Okay, so I'm going to set up, and okay, here we go in a few seconds. I'll see you on the other side.
All right.
International Pagan Radio, a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week streaming radio station. We have informative Facebook page, interactive Facebook group, absorbing interviews with musicians, engaging shows with excellent hosts, and dynamic interviews with spiritual leaders. Come join us. We have the very best pagan music from around the world. We feature artists such as Dave the Bard, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, Elaine Silver, Izon, Brian Hinkey, Robin Renee, Fawn, and so many more, all available for your listening pleasure 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We are also available on TuneIn Radio, so go to www.internationalpaganradio.com. It's all pagan, all the time.
Now we return to Economics and the Spiritual Path, hosted by David Axelrod.
Well, welcome back, everybody. I'm here
Howdy
with Gary, and we're talking all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, this has been a fun half hour. I'm looking forward to the second half.
Well, in this second half, we're going to elaborate a little bit more on realms of experience, but in terms of the relationship between time and choice. And so I'm going to go right to it. Does that sound good to you? Okay. So in terms of time and choice, there's a couple of ways to understand it. One is, the time frame in which you're looking outward when you're making a choice. In other words, you're making a choice about something that's going to happen in 5 seconds or in 5 minutes or 5 hours or 5 days or 5 years or 500 years. So that's one way that time and choice relate. Another way is how much time do you have to make a choice? And this is where I want to jump off on, because this also relates to the realms of experience. So one type of time frame for choice might be called the immediate, so the immediate time frame. And the immediate time frame is the one that is so short that the choice you make is really just a matter of reflex, right? You have to already be wired if you're going to be able to make a choice that quickly. So, for example, you know, when you get tapped on your knee, they do that test to see how your reflexes are. Well, that's about making a choice, like, immediately. You know, am I going to move my leg or am I not going to move my leg? And so that reflexive quality, that would be associated with the realm of the physical. So when you have to make an immediate choice, it is being decided at the physical level. It doesn't matter what's going on with your emotions or your reasons or even your spirit, because it's you're either wired to do something or you're not wired to do something. And
how much does that go to training, though? Muscle memory.
That absolutely goes a lot into training. The idea here is that if you recognize that there are times when your choice is going to be at the physical level, then as long as you have some lead time, all right, before you have to make that choice, then you're in a position to do something about it. So, for example, like in sports, you know, if you're trying to learn how to hit a baseball, well, you know, you can practice it. But when you, when you're practicing, what are you doing? You're literally rewiring your brain, okay, so that when it takes in the sense information about the speed of the ball and the direction and the spin, it can very, very quickly decide, you know, how your arms should move. So the training prepares you by changing the wiring in your brain, which changes your reflexes in the moment that that ball is being pitched at you, because you don't have much time to react.
Yeah, there's no thought involved. There's a reaction, a reflex.
That's right. So it's at the reflex level. And you either wire it to, you know, in such a way that you'll actually hit the ball, or you're wired in such a way that you're just going to, you know, whiff at it. And sports are, you know, a useful field to discuss this, because everybody understands, you know, no matter how talented or gifted you are, you still have to practice so that, you know, you're prepared for that moment. You know, very often you might have a coach say, don't think about it. You know, just do it. Don't think about it. And, you know, that gets at the core of being in the moment. It's, you want to be prepared for the moment. If you're not prepared for it in that moment, it's too late. Because you can't be thinking about what you're doing while it's going on. So that's the immediate, okay? So that has to do with reflexes. So it's the reflexive and it's the physical. Now, where there's immediate, then there is mediate. And there's two types of mediate. One type of mediate I refer to as the non-reflective. So this is a different word. So the immediate with an I, that was reflexive. In immediate, you can either have it be non-reflective, reflect as a mirror, or reflective. So non-reflective or reflective. If it's mediate and non-reflective, okay, that's sort of like a short run, and that's the emotional. And so when you have a little bit more time to make a choice, in other words, you don't have to do it by reflex. So you've got a little bit more time than that, but you don't have enough time to think about it, then whatever it is that's going on with you emotionally, that's going to be the decision maker, right? So you have enough time where you don't have to have it be, you know, a reflexive response, but you don't have enough time to reflect on it, to think about it. And, you know, wherever you are emotionally, that's going to guide you. So, you know, if you're in an emotionally good mood, sort of like you're at a moment where you want to do risk-taking, then maybe you'll make the choice to do the thing that is more risky. If you're depressed or you're sad, you know, you might choose the thing that is less risky emotionally. So I find this useful, again, to make that distinction between the physical and the emotional, because that's going to tell you, you know, something about how you you want to be able to, you know, manage your feelings and emotions. Now, you know, you can't manage your feelings and emotions all the time, because you'll burn yourself out, and then you're just wasted. But for short periods of time, you can manage your emotions. And so it's in these moments where you have some time to react, but not enough time to really sit down and reflect and think about all the consequences, It's in those moments you want to be trained in emotional mindfulness and to be able to be to prepare yourself so that you're in the right emotional state so that you get the outcome that you want, you know, or the outcome that you're looking for. Maybe you're in the middle of negotiating something and, the key there is you don't want to go in all, emotionally distraught, right? Because if the other person recognizes it, then that makes you vulnerable. That doesn't mean you don't have your concerns or whatever, but that you can be choosing how to emote at that moment.
Okay.
Then the other type of immediate choice is where it is reflective. So you actually have time to reflect on that choice. And that's a little bit more long run, and that's where the rational comes in. So when you have enough time that you don't have to, reflectively respond, and you have enough time that your emotions don't have to be the decision maker, that's when you can kind of sit down. You consider all the possibilities, because when you consider a possibility, there's going to be an emotional response, right? So, for example, if you've got to make a decision about, am I going to get together with my brother or am I going to get together with my sister? And, if you think about I'm going to get together with my brother, it'll be one set of emotions around that. Or, if you think about I'm going to get together with my sister, another set of emotions. But then if you have enough time, you could sit down and think, okay, so what are going to be the consequences? And, do I want to deal with them? And, can I make this work in a way that if I went by my emotions, I wouldn't have even considered it? So we've got the immediate, that's at the physical level. So we have the immediate at the non-reflective, that's emotional. The immediate and reflective, and that's the rational. And then is what I refer to as the eternal time frame. And that's the realm of the universal, the intuitive, or the spiritual. And the eternal, I use this in a very specific way. Eternity, as I like to tell people, eternity is not forever. Eternity is an experience where you kind of jump out of the timeline and you can kind of look at, a moment from outside of the moment. And that, again, has a kind of a universal quality, has a transcendent quality. It has a spiritual quality, and that's where, the intuition comes in. And so when you have the freedom in choice where you don't, it's not an immediate choice, and you don't have to make it either from an emotional or a rational place, that's where you get your deepest spiritual guidance in making your choices. And those are kind of the moments where, you may get some deep change in the way you think about the world, or you get a deep change in how you relate to your emotions and feelings, or you get some deep insight about, how the physical world works. So that's how time and choice relate, and how they relate to the realms of experience. So that, this is important because when people want us to behave in a certain way, they're going to try to trigger, us either, at the physical level, so we just, reflexively respond, or possibly at the emotional level, because that's where people outside of ourselves can have the greatest control over how we make choices.
Advertising.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Advertising is that's a very big one.
Advertising,
but not
all about feeling.
Yeah, sometimes it's as simple as senses. But certainly, so advertising is one, but another is when, we're making decisions with other people, especially people that we have a, close, loving relationship to. And, at that point, we can be very vulnerable to emotional appeal. Sometimes like a parent might make a child feel guilty, or if the child is very adept, they could make the parent feel guilty. And
oh, yeah.
and then they can influence the choice that's being made. So again, with the whole, Zen Buddhist approach, the idea, right, is to not to be so attached that either the physical or the emotional or even the way you think is the cause of your choice. You kind of want it to be from, the highest place where it's consistent with, who you want to be.
I try to teach people all the time that you cannot be made to feel something you do not choose to feel.
Right. But that
someone cannot make me
conscious.
Feel guilty unless I allow them to make me feel guilty. If I do not agree that there is guilt, then I cannot be made to feel guilty. So that is, training yourself to be at a rational or spiritual level, not dealing with an emotional level.
That's right. That's right. And that takes a lot of mindfulness and a lot of training. Some people pick up on it pretty quickly. Depends on how much baggage you're carrying. So I want to add a couple of more things before, I have to get complete with this. This has to deal with awareness. I find it useful to make a distinction between external awareness and internal awareness. So external awareness is, awareness of the world external to yourself. And external awareness, there's an element of it's at a distance. And because it's at a distance, it's something that's sight-like, right? Because when you see something, okay, the fact that you can see it means that it's at a distance. It may not be far away, but it's not where you are. All right? Does that make sense? You
yes.
can only see something at a distance. Internal awareness, it's as if it's right there. It's like it's inside of you. So there's no distance between you and what that is. And so internal awareness is more feeling-like. And I think this is important. I think this is important because when you're trying to get clarity about where the locus of awareness is, you can tap into, is it at a distance? Does it evoke sight or the seeing part of your brain? Or does it feel like it's immediate and evokes more of the feeling-like part of the brain?
Okay.
And then one last thought to try to close this up and pull it all together. So before I was talking about eternity and the eternal, and what I'd like to put out there for all who are listening, that an eternal being is aware of all internally. So if you're coming from an eternal perspective, there's nothing external. It's all internal. And so when we're tapping into the spiritual, when we're tapping into, you know, imagining what the divine is about, I like to throw that out there, that the way I conceive the divine, God or gods or, you know, however you want to, describe them, if they're eternal, you know, if they have that all-knowing quality, all of that awareness is internal. So to that divine being, everything is internal. And
because it's all part of the same whole.
It's part of the same whole. How can something be outside of God? You know, it's like when we think about the divine, because of the fact that in our everyday lives, you know, we see ourselves as separate from other things, we can kind of imagine, you know, that there's something external. But when I try to imagine the divine, I'm left with, well, what would it be to experience the world in which everything is internal? You know, there is no external. And I like using that to stimulate the kind of, you know, reflection or meditation that allows people to see things differently. And it's also, you know, kind of consistent with, Hindu yogic tradition, where their concept, that older concept of their form of science back then, was you had to look inward. And that certainly makes sense if what you want is sort of that, you know, eternal godlike perspective is only the internal. So that's how I wanted to wrap up time and choice in the realms of experience.
Yeah, you kind of reminded me of the end of the Harry Potter series. I don't know if you watched those movies or read the books.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I saw the movie.
There's a point where Harry Potter is on the next to the tracks at King's Cross Station talking to the spirit of Dumbledore. And he says, but is this real or is it all in my head? And Dumbledore's answer is, well, of course it's all in your head. Does that make it any less real?
Exactly.
So that passing within, that's the eternal question of shamanism. Do we pass to realms within ourselves, or do we cross into realms outside of ourselves, and does the distinction matter?
It's very Mobius strip, isn't it?
It is. It is. I mean, we just keep following along, and we'll end up back where we started, inside and out. Does it really matter? As long as we understand that it's all interconnected, then it's like you said, it's all internal.
Well, you know, another question is not so much, you know, does it matter, as how about it does matter, but it matters in how you choose to experience the world, you know, how you, you know, what you want to achieve.
I'm actually in the other direction. When we do shamanic journey work, does it matter whether we go? Internal, external, the outcome is the same. And, you know, I'm not sure that the distinction is important.
Oh, it's specifically with shamanic work. But, oh, no, I agree with you there. I guess I'm thinking in terms of, you know, when you've done shamanic work, you know, what is it that you're bringing back with you?
Well, I'm certainly bringing it back to the physical realm where we are trapped with our illusion of separateness, because that illusion of separateness is part of the material experience that the soul has to go through to understand cause and effect.
This is the
soul's training ground. To experience the physical, to experience the sensual, which spirit cannot experience without incarnating into these shells and being dominated by the physical world and our rules of physics. So,
yeah.
But that's probably another whole topic for several shows.
Oh my gosh! Yes. Oh, my gosh, yes.
Well, I've enjoyed tonight. Thank you for allowing me to participate.
Well, thank you for participating. I find it quite enjoyable, our conversations and back and forth.
And I'm learning a great deal about your interpretation, your choice of codifying and defining and the precision of the terminology is very enjoyable for me. So I find that adds a layer of communication that we lack sometimes in the workaday world that we live in. You deal with college students. I'm guessing the precision of their language is somewhat lacking.
Well, at the freshman level, definitely.
All right. Well, I guess it's just about time for you to tell people how to get in touch with you and stuff, and what's coming up next week and all that.
Well, coming up next week, I'm going to talk about mindfulness and economics and the law of distraction. So not the law of attraction. That's everybody else is talking about that. I'm going to talk about the law of distraction. And you can contact me either by visiting my website at daxe.com, daxe.com, or at davidaxerodphd.com. You can also send me an email at dax@dax.com, or if you go to davidaxerodphd.com, you can pull down a page and send me a message from there.
All right. Well, again, thank you for allowing me to participate. I look forward to our next foray into thinking together, being mindful.
Yes. Thinking about senses and feelings and intuition.
Absolutely. Thanks again. You have a great night, sir.
Okay. You too, and enjoy Thanksgiving.
Indeed, you as well.
All righty. And good night to everyone as we close.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.
Alrighty.